Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. You know that we come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine radio station, as well as podcasting at the homepage of richarddugan.com, as well as the radio show's page, and also on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn, Spotify, Stitcher, and more locations coming your way. When you're going to the SoundCloud playlist to listen to these interviews, you're going to see in the upper right-hand corner a little grocery cart. That is the link to our guest's website, and we will be linked to our guest's website for today's broadcast as well as all others, and you'll be able to continue your evolutionary process, your research, your studying, your education, etc., etc. So please avail yourselves, and be sure to listen to the podcast, because the radio show, it's going to come up short, probably by 10, 15, 20 minutes, just depending upon our guest's availability. So be sure to listen to the podcasts. I encourage you to do that for the sole purpose of getting that information. I have nothing to sell you. I just have something to give you, and that is this wonderful information from our guests. If you'd like to support the work that we are doing, if you like what we're doing, if it resonates with you, we're grateful for any support you can give us. We do have a PayPal account that is set up so that you can support us. We are not nonprofit, so that you cannot deduct this from your taxes. But be that as it may, we certainly are greatly appreciative, even of energetic support. So thank you so much in advance. Today's program, I think you're going to enjoy. We're going to get an interesting view today, I think, of a fun subject. I'm learning more and more about it. I actually named one of our cats after this individual who, not my guest so much, but the individual that was written about by my guest. Actually, his original name was Siddhartha. We call him Sid, and there are times when he acts anything other than like the Buddha. Today's program, we're going to talk about a Buddha in the teachers, in the teachings. I beg your pardon. I'm reading that wrong. In the trenches. Buddha in the trenches. We're going to find out what that's all about. The timeless system for developing unshakable performance under pressure. And I have to say that today has been one of those days for me. I've been under pressure by a lot of different sources. But then again, nowadays, who isn't? Taubman, I thank you so much for joining us via Skype here on the program. Thank you. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, what a pleasure to be here, Richard. Your reputation precedes you. I'm really honored to be here.
I'm not sure what that means. I'm afraid of that reputation. I'm sure it's a good one. I'd like to think. I've given up the notion of this being an accidental life and this is all just happenstance, because otherwise I'd be out raping, pillaging, and plundering, and then my reputation would definitely precede me. to be honest with you, yes, today was one of those days where I was getting close to deadline. I had not received the necessary information I needed to complete a project, and I actually was able to finish the project within about 12 minutes of broadcast. Now,
well, bravo.
I don't like doing that. I despise running it that close. Now, okay, it's great, Steve, it's great that I can do that. It's great that I'm able to get it done and so forth. My problem, of course, is that prior to diving into the project to get it in on time, I'm frustrated. I'm venting. I'm saying all kinds of different things, maybe to myself or the computer or to whoever might be in the room. I jump into the project. I redirect my energies. Off I go, and then, like I said, within 12 minutes of broadcast, boom, it was there. And then I get a text saying, oh, by the way, we just heard the first couple of segments. We need to make a change. Uh-huh. And I'm just sitting here going, okay. So I would love to be the Buddha, be Siddhartha, searching for enlightenment and sitting down at the Bodhi tree and realizing, oh, yeah, if I just stop searching for it, I'll find it, which is a paradox in and of itself. But you have a system, a timeless system for developing unshakable performance under pressure. Now, there's a part of me that says I'm kind of there with my example, except for the first part where before I got started, I'm do I need to make some changes somewhere in that regard so that I'm not going prior to and wasting my energy?
You know, there's a distinction I like to make that I think is a really important one for all of us, and that's the difference between change and transformation. So change in your scenario, in your situation, would be I've got to stop feeling this way. I've got to stop, you know, getting all agitated and aggravated in this situation. That's, you know, and then you're trying to use your brain to change your brain. Right? Mm-hmm. Your brain says, I shouldn't be this way. And because your brain says, I shouldn't be this way, then another part of your brain kind of takes over to try to make you not be that way. I'm going to be placid. I'm going to be serene. I'm going to be the kind of person who isn't bothered by, you know, last minute changes and deadlines and snafus. And the problem is most of us, when we start trying to develop ourselves personally, that's one of the first things we do is we try to live up to this ideal of how we're supposed to handle stress. So that's change. I'm going to try to change the way I handle the situation. Now, transformation, on the other hand, is what we might call going meta or jumping up to a higher level of consciousness, or quite simply just getting a broader perspective on the whole thing, right? So you may notice yourself starting to feel agitated and aggravated, but the part of you that's noticing you being agitated and aggravated is laughing at the fact that you're agitated and aggravated.
Right? Yeah,
and that's a very good thing, because most of us, unless you know we've been doing deep, deep work for many, many years, we don't have a lot of control over what the Buddha called the first arrow, but we have a lot more control over the second arrow. So the first arrow is something happens and it, you know, like an arrow shoots you. You got no control over that. All these things happen and maybe your initial emotional reaction to it, that's the first arrow. But the second arrow is when you get upset about being upset. That's like taking the arrow out of yourself and stabbing yourself with it again. Not a good idea.
I don't think so. I wouldn't want to do that.
Right, right. So it's really perspective. It's humor. I think a good sense of humor is really paramount in this, because when you notice yourself starting to go down the rabbit hole and being aggravated, instead of being aggravated about being aggravated, that's where you just get to look and say, oh, there I go again. There, you know, you got me again. You got me again.
Mm-hmm.
And just, yeah. You know, it's poignant, it's funny, it's charming, and, you know, it's just, it's looking at wherever you're at from the eyes of love and appreciation and acceptance.
Hmm. Well, I know that we're all trying to make it through each day. I have coined a word that I like to use in an analogy that we're all struggling, we're all in the process in survival mode, but we want to shift from that to thrival.
Thrival, yeah.
Okay. And it is quite a challenge in these days with all with being bombarded by so much, especially information. And it isn't even a question of the source of information; it's just the volume. The volume,
right,
of information, let alone then trying to parse it to determine what's relevant for you. You know, that's why when I say at the beginning of these programs, you know, we send you to our guest website, and you go there and continue your education, your evolutionary process. But hey, if it doesn't resonate for you, don't go there yet. Maybe one day you will. You've heard the interview. You've heard the information. But it's just, it doesn't click just quite yet. That's fine.
And that's one way to parse the information is by, you know, that instead of it just being whether it's good information or not. I mean, there's a lot of good information out there, mm-hmm. but is the information relevant? Does it fit for you? Does it, you know, is it, are you comfortable receiving it now?
Yeah.
Those are all really important questions to ask.
So how did you begin this, what the heck? This Buddha-esque journey of yours.
Well, you know, I think like most of us, we start from necessity.
Okay.
And for me, it was a necessity born of a dysfunctional family background and a lot of neurosis and anxiety and just a lot of inner angst that I tried to think my way out of, because I've got a good head on my shoulders. People always said, you've got a good head on your shoulders. You know, I'm a thinking guy. But I couldn't think my way out of my misery. Hmm. And so somehow, some way, by the grace of God or whatever, I ended up stumbling upon the notion that our heads are not, that's not where we get our serenity from. Right. It's important to have a head. It's important that you have that computer sitting on the top of your neck that could help you navigate the world. But at the same time, there's another whole set of skills that have nothing to do with thinking. In fact, they have to do with the opposite of thinking. They have to do with your ability to learn how not to think, how to just get quiet. And most of us in our society aren't taught that. And as you very aptly said, our society has been conspiring to throw more information at us. So unless we take charge of our own minds, unless we take charge of this, I've got to get quiet, I've got to like step out of the stream or the storm and find the calm in the eye of the storm, then you're always being batted around. So I was always being batted around, and I felt, I'd think, and I'd get involved with a project, and when the project didn't go well, I'd try to think my way through to the other side of it. And it was very tension producing. I felt a lot of anxiety and, tension in my stomach and heart palpitations and all that. So I studied first Western psychology, and then I stumbled upon Eastern psychology. And what I ended up doing was a 10-day silent meditation retreat. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning for me of understanding, not just understanding, but experiencing silence. Hmm. And then, once you go there, once I had the chance to go into inner peace, into inner silence, it changed everything. It changed the way I responded to commotion, to chaos. You know, things would happen, but I wasn't attached to them anymore. I could sort of watch them happen, and I could monitor the feelings inside of myself and be like, oh, that's not getting you where you want to go. And luckily, that's not me. We are not our minds. We like to think we are our minds, but we're not. And when you come to realize there's some aspect of you that's not your mind, then you could stand in that quiet place and decide whether you want to go down the rabbit hole or not.
Hmm. Yeah, rabbit holes used quite often. I know that's from, Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
And it's really very interesting how, we as I said, we allow ourselves this whole situation of being sort of drawn in. I share with people that I absolutely did not give one whit about politics, about what was going on in the presidential election of 2016. Mm-hmm. I heard what was said. I heard all of that, but I said, no, that's not what I want to waste my energies on. And then, I let that go. But in September of 2016, as I put it, I got sucked in.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 6 months to get unsucked, mm-hmm. as it were. And it took me another couple of months into 2017 to actually utter the words, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how I don't want to behave.
Ah, yeah.
And then I was able another couple of months later to utter the next set of phrases, I forgive you. But more importantly, I forgive me for allowing myself to be manipulated, to being tossed about. And yes, every once in a while, I'll see a news story and I'll either groan or sort of maybe a little smile of, yeah, okay, you got your comeuppance, but I don't care. And just try not to, again, it goes back to that issue of where we expend our energies, what we're really focused on. Is that what you find with a lot of folks when they're trying to, this is a phrase that's been used down through the centuries, I'm sure. In these times, Because there are always these times, right?
Right.
Where you're trying to carry out a task, and it could be a very small task or a very large one, and yet your mind is just racing. Is it, from your perspective, is it advisable to tell the mind to just shut up or be quiet? Or, as it was shared with me once, you need to make your mind your friend and just tell it, I need some time. I need some space just for a little while, 5-10 minutes, and then we'll get back together again. What's your perspective, especially when it comes to the chatter that's just literally constantly going on?
Well, you raised a lot of interesting points there. First of all, I think it's helpful for us to take the attitude that we are all junkies. We're all addicts.
Oh, okay.
And so we become addicted to our own thinking. And in the same way that an alcoholic has all kinds of justifications for the next drink, we have justifications for the next thought. And so it's very hard for us to detach ourselves from this thing, because it's kind of like we're all wired that way. It's like, I've got to have that next thought. In fact, it would be wrong not to. And so if you could appreciate that you're kind of like, you're addicted. You're addicted to your own thinking. It's like they say with alcoholics, the first step is admitting you've got a problem. Most of us don't admit that we have a problem when it comes to thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't admit that our thoughts create our world. Our thoughts create our misery. And that, you know, it's Gurdjieff said that the first step for escaping from prison is realizing you're in prison. And we are in prison. We're imprisoned by our thoughts, by our beliefs, by, you know, what we feel is right and, you know, what should be. And we've got to think our way through this. So starting with that, starting with the idea that if I'm miserable, it's because I'm making myself miserable because I can't let go of this set of thoughts that generate a new set of thoughts that generate a new set of thoughts that I feel are vitally important to my well-being, which is nonsense. It's just, it's an addiction. It's nothing more than addiction. And, you know, the more serious you are about it, like, you know, there are probably people listening who say, no, this is serious. Well, then you're addicted that much more. That's all it means. Mm. So then you get to your other question, which is, you know, what do we do with that chattering mind? Do I say shut up to my chattering mind when, you know, I'm trying to befriend my chattering mind? Or, you know, in other words, do I play good cop or do I play bad cop? You know, what's the best way to do it? And the truth of the matter is that neither one of them work without practice. In other words, you know, if you're not taking the time to practice some kind of mindfulness exercise, you know, meditation is the first one that comes to mind, but there are others. Some way in which you willfully direct your focus to something other than your thoughts. So maybe, you know, I think the most effective way is to learn how to meditate, because what you're doing is you're literally, it's a sit down strike to your ego, to your thinking mind. So as soon as a thought arises, you say thinking, you say to yourself, oh, that's just a thought, and you return to whatever the object of your focus is. So maybe it's your breath, or maybe it's your physical sensation, whatever it is, that's where your attention goes back to. And then your mind, you know, about a half a second later comes back with all the reasons why it's got to be in charge. And then you say, thinking, and you go back again. And so what you're doing is you're exercising your focus muscles. You're exercising your ability to be be in the driver's seat of your own attention. Where is my attention going? And so this may all sound very esoteric, or it may sound very, you know, so what, now what? But the reality is that unless you can do that, you're a victim. You're a victim of your thinking. You're a victim of your mind. So now, you know, you realize your mind is torturing you. And then the question arises that you brought up. It's like, well, should I tell myself to shut up, or should I just like befriend my mind?
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, I don't care what you do, you're not going to be successful at it because you haven't been practicing.
Mm. Yeah.
You haven't been doing what it takes. It's like, you know, if you haven't been doing any physical exercise and suddenly, you know, a loved one is pinned under a vehicle, or you know, or drops a barbell on their neck or something, you could think all the different ways that you're going to get it off, but you can't because you're not strong enough. Right? You need the strength. So this is an being mindful is an energy regime. It's an exercise regime. It's a matter of being strong enough to make the right choice about where your attention goes.
Mindfulness has really become it's almost akin to one word that was used so much in the latter part of the 90s and even into the early 2000s of quantum. Everything was quantum.
Yeah.
You know, and now mindfulness, but mindfulness is, you know, it's not attached to everything. It is something. And I know that a lot of folks are having problems with that because it's hard to stay in the moment. I use this analogy. I don't know if you have ever spent time in a recording studio or doing any kind of recording and editing of your own, but in my work, I'm doing it all the time, of course. Even as we speak, I'm recording this program.
Right.
And often speaking on these programs, we talk about the now moment, right now. And so I use the screen of the recording as it's going by, and there's this line in the center of the recorder, in the recording field. And on the left side of the line is the wave. It's been created. It's the sounds of your voice and my voice and music and whatever else. Mm-hmm. On the right side of the line, nothing, zero. It's empty. So the left side is the past, and the right side's the future. And that's that line that is the now moment. That if I hear it in my ears, it's already the now. It's already the past, which is kind of that's got to be a frustrating concept to the mind, because it's like, well, wait a minute. In order for me to be able to communicate with Steve, I got to be able to understand what he's saying and then interpret it in my brain and then be able to come up with some kinds of questions that make sense and continue the conversation. So to be in the now moment is a very difficult thing to do. Because
I love it.
Because all of our senses, once they have sensed something, it's in the past.
That's right.
That's got to drive you nuts.
Yeah, it's like trying to open up the refrigerator to see if the light is off.
There you go. So how do we handle that? How do we? I don't want to say intellectualize, but you know, the mind is sort of the first place that we have to go, in one sense. So, all right. So what do we do with that now, Steve? Please help us.
Okay. what we're trying to accomplish is an experience of being in the now, and as you said, every experience very quickly becomes the past. Every experience becomes a concept, right? So I have this great idea, but as soon as I have the great idea and I kind of write it down or I think about it, now it's a concept. Now it's mental again. It's no longer pure potential. So we're stuck with that reality. So our minds are incapable of keeping us present in the way that you're talking about present. Our minds can't do it because our minds are made up of thinking. And we're going to think about being present. As soon as you think about being present, you're not. So the answer lies in where you put your attention. And so in the work that I do, the kind of meditation that I teach is called Vipassana or mindfulness meditation. And put very simply, it's a process of getting out of your mind and into your body. So getting out of your mind and into your body, basically what you're doing is you're just being present to whatever experience, whatever sensations you have in your body. So, you know, in Vipassana meditation training, you'll sit quietly and you'll start to notice any sensations you feel on the top of your head. And then you'll move it down into your face and then down to your throat and then down to your arms and your hands and fingers. And you'll work your way down your body. And as you do that, thoughts will arise inevitably. even thoughts about the fact that you're doing it. And then you'll just say to yourself, thinking, and you'll bring your attention back to the physical sensations. And it begins to change how you apply focus. It begins to put you in the now without ever having to think about the now.
Hmm. Well, it's something that we need to deal with because, you know, we're getting pulled in so many different directions as far as the mind is concerned. What right. level, and I'm not sure exactly how we can grade this per se. Maybe you can help me with this. Any way of quantifying as we progress through this process, or is that counterproductive when it comes?
No, it's fine because very simply, how miserable are you?
Okay, I'm with you there.
That's really the ultimate goal here is to be happy.
That's funny. That's yeah. I love that. How miserable are you?
So, you know, if you notice that there are things that are getting you, and then you start a process, you start a practice that allows you to be more attentive to where your, you know, where your attention goes and that it's not driving you into shoulds and it should be this way or it should be that way, then what'll happen is over time you'll start to notice that less things bother you.
Ah.
And that's where it really comes from. The things that used to really bother you go from being really serious, horrible things to being just mild irritations and ultimately to being funny.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A lot of the things that used to, think back over your own life, right? You know, I used to really care about this. Luckily, I don't anymore. And there are certain things that used to seem really serious. I mean, you know what? I found an old journal of mine. I used to journal a lot. And I wrote a journal entry about a girl that I'd been involved with, and I think I was in the throes of deciding whether or not to get out of that relationship. And I had a lot of very serious concerns about it because, you know, if I left, you know, how would I feel? How would she feel? What if she found somebody else? And it was a very serious conversation I was having with myself about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And as I read the thing, what struck me was I had no idea who this girl was. I literally had no recollection of who she was. Like, it was life or death, and now it was, I don't even know who she is.
Yeah.
Right? So that's so true. Wow. In our lives. We have so many things in our lives where we say, you know, someday we'll look back at this and laugh. And, wow. And I say, why wait?
You know, why, laugh why now. Wait? Yeah.
Why is this really serious right now? What's the context that makes this serious? And it always comes back to your thinking. If you got quiet in the midst of the most heinous, difficult time, if you could literally just go inside and feel the sensations within your body and let thought slip away, you would fall into a different state of consciousness. You'd find that your happiness is internally, not externally derived. And the things that need fixing, and this is always the question that comes up right now. The question is, well, if I do that, won't I be complacent? Won't I let bad things happen in the world or to myself or whatever, if I stop caring so much about them?
Mm.
And the answer is no, you won't, because it's a different technology. The technology of dealing appropriately with situations is not the same as the technology of being upset about them.
Mm. Interesting. Well, I have to say that I want to say that I have made a certain amount of progress in this area because back in November, and I've shared this story with our listeners before, back in November of 2018, I was involved in a non-injury, I'm going to phrase it that way from now on, non-injury car accident.
Okay.
And when I first got out of the car, actually when I was sitting in the car, I immediately pushed it on the emergency brake, the parking brake, so the car wouldn't move any further so that, you know, evidence could be preserved. But I've had that sense of being, as the phrase is, shaken up.
Yeah.
And that lasted 30 seconds to a minute because then I shifted into my head saying, okay, first things first, 911. Then I call my insurance company and then I call my wife. Maybe I should have called the wife first. Then I called my boss. Then I called an interview that I had scheduled for literally 30 minutes from the moment of that incident.
Oh my.
And then I started taking pictures. And so I got out of the being shaken up. I was kind of frustrated from the standpoint of, oh, man, this is not the way this is not the way I wanted to start my day as, oh, this is going to ruin my whole day. I didn't go there. But then I started to notice the other driver's partner. She was on the sidewalk, walking, talking on a phone, probably doing the same thing. He was taking pictures also. And very frustrated, he was blaming me. And of course, it turns out it was not my fault. Mm-hmm. So she was the epitome of calm. And when I talked with my wife, same thing. She was just the epitome of calm. I'm glad you're okay. Don't worry about it. It's no big deal. It's, you know, it's stuff. It's this, that, and so on. And I, of course, I gotcha. And then the police officer shows up. It was like I hit the trifecta of peace, you know? It was unbelievable. And he, of course, explained to the other gentleman, separate from me, you know, here's the situation. This is the law, blah, 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 blah. And I got this urge, walk up to this guy in front of the officer, extend your hand, and you don't thank the man. You just say, I'm glad neither of us were hurt. Now, go make this a better day than it started out to be, because I'm going to. And he had his arms crossed the whole time. And then extended his hand, and then he laughed a little bit, and it just calmed everything down.
That's a great story.
And I felt afterwards like, wow, what is this all about? And what I was asking that question was, what is this leading to? What is the universe not trying to tell me, but what's down the road, you metaphorically speaking, that this has opened up?
Yeah. Well, more of the same.
Well,
more opportunity to turn difficulties into positive opportunities.
And my wife and I had been wanting to buy a truck for the longest time, and now we have one.
There
and
you
it's
go.
It's perfect. I love driving it. The payments, yeah, a little bit more, but you know, every time I get into that truck or I think about it, and even when I pair that up with thinking about how much the monthly payments are and the insurance, I feel nothing but, I can say peace, comfort, a little bit of excitement because I've never driven a truck before, so it's a new experience, and I'm really enjoying it. I mean, the enjoyment thereof. So this is something there has happened, and I have to also share with you, Steve. Steve Trauman, by the way, is my guest, and we're talking about Buddha in the Trenches, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that and how he came to that. But the one thing that really was so fascinating for me was the fact that I was able to make that shift. And I used to stress and strain for years with my first wife and even with my second wife here early on. Every time bills came due, you know, you cried, you cringed if the creditors called. You didn't want to answer the phone and so forth. And now it's like, there's an example of it doesn't matter. It's important in one sense at one level, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, I think about that snowman 4 billion miles away taking a picture by, what was it, New Horizon? That snowman doesn't care. The cosmos doesn't care.
Right.
It's just doing what it's doing. So that's the perspective. And so I'm wondering, mindfulness, where does it... I get caught up in the words, the correct words here, but where is it supposed to take us? Where do we want it to take us? Where do we want to be in that sense? Have we already covered that, or can you maybe expound on that before we go to break?
Sure. Well, where you want to be is much like what you were. You want to be in a place of choice. So the circumstance is not choosing for you how you're going to respond or react, but rather the choice is yours because you've done something that most people haven't done. And what that is, and you even use the word in passing, you begin to notice, right? You start to notice, oh, I felt this. Oh, I thought that. But as soon as you start noticing, you're at a higher level of consciousness, you know, because the one noticing is not the one reacting. Oh, there was a reaction. I just noticed the reaction. Well, who said I noticed the reaction? Not the one reacting. It's a higher level of consciousness. And so mindfulness becomes, you know, I mean, the standard definition is awareness plus equanimity. You're aware, in other words, you know what's going on, you know what you're feeling or thinking, you've noticed. And equanimity meaning you're accepting it, you're not fighting it. It's just like, oh, there it is.
And by the way, that is a great word, I think, equanimity.
Yeah, equanimity is a great word.
Love that word. I actually remember hearing it one of the first times by one of my favorite musicians, Harry Chapin, in one of his spoken portions of an album where he is talking about his uncle who basically was near his death and was talking about how, you know, we spend all our lives working, you know, and You know, sometimes you come home tired, and sometimes you have a good tired, and sometimes it's a bad tired. If it's a good tired or it's a bad tired, that means you spent your day fighting other people's fights, doing other people's work, and being at the beck and call of other people. And you lay your head down and you're exhausted, and but you don't rest easy. But a good tired is when you fought your fights and you did your battles and you did your thing and you did your work, and you lay your head down and You sleep the sleep of peace, if you will, you know, and that you know, we're trying to understand what's beyond that implacable wall of nothingness, you know, that's death, but we're always trying to find that equanimity, you know, and I think that's also true too, that we're trying to put into context our existence, and then in some instances, what's next? And I know that a lot of people, they're really tied up in it. We've had many guests on the program who've had near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, and they say it's no big deal. Mm-hmm. But for those of us who haven't had it, and I'm not one of them who has had them, nor am I one of those who is uncertain, because I share with people on this program on a regular basis. If I walked out today, got hit by a bus or God forbid, a heart attack or whatever you might contrive, and it was my day, I'm good to go. I'm ready. Have I finished? No. There's a lot more I'd like to do, but I'm not going to regret not having finished because I've done so much already in the scant, small space of 58 and a half years that I've been on the planet.
I think it's a Native American saying, might even come from, might have been in a movie like A Dance with Wolves kind of a movie where it says, it's a good day to die. Mm. And then there's something like a good day to die is the only good day to live.
I've heard that. I like that very much so. We are talking today. I think this is fascinating stuff. I hope, folks, that you will research it and investigate it and go to what is your website, by the way? Give that to us and we'll make sure that everybody gets there by connecting to you.
SteveTaubman.com, Steve, TaubMan.com.
Buddha in the Trenches, the timeless system for developing unshakable performance under pressure. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And guess what? We'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
And welcome back. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Steve Taubman, and he is the author of Buddha in the Trenches, The Timeless System for Developing Unshakable Performance Under Pressure. You're a mindfulness coach. I mean, we've talked about that time and time again on this program. How did you become a mindfulness coach? What was it about mindfulness that impacted you so? Because, I mean, there are people who are yoga coaches, and they're quantum this and that and the other coaches and so forth, life coaches. And maybe there's another way to put it too. What's the difference between a life coach and a mindfulness coach?
Mindfulness confers basic sanity. A lot of us are trying to operate through our lives without basic sanity. Right. And so in mindfulness, you know, my first concern for somebody is, are they sane enough to recognize the way in which their mind is taking them astray? That's the most important thing. If you're, you know, if you're centered, if you're calm, if you're observant, if you're able to notice, then it doesn't really matter much what you're doing or thinking, as long as not you doing and thinking it. As long as there's a part of you that's sort of standing back at what we call being backstage. So teaching people to be backstage, it's like there's some kind of weird play going on that stage called your life, but at the same time you're backstage. You're not fully invested in it. You don't believe every thing that's happening. And so you could extricate yourself from difficult situations.
Hmm. You know, and that's a phrase that a lot of people use throughout their day when strange stuff happens. That's unbelievable. And yet there they were, right there. They were looking right at it. And yet they still utter that phrase. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they don't believe it happened, but it's more a statement, if you will, of consternation because of what someone did or some certain event. I mean, we have that experience like with our animals sometimes where, you know, we just sit there and the dog or the cat will do something very unusual. Go, unbelievable. And I said that the other day when I was driving to a driver who did something that I, you know, was contrary to the way I would do it. Let's put it that way. Okay. Yeah. I'll be kind as I can be. Mm-hmm. And I said, I uttered that word, that, you know, that word, unbelievable. And I looked at that and I said, no, that's pretty believable because it just happened right in front of me. That is very believable.
As believable as it can be. It
exactly. Happens. And I know that, you know, we talk about also words having power, right?
Yeah.
Well, when we start uttering words like unbelievable to something we just saw, I'm not even sure what that dynamic generates. But it's not the truth because, again, I just saw it. And I love there's a passage in the Bible where Jesus is quoted as saying, and I paraphrase a bit, you know, blessed are those who have seen and believe. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet still believe. A little different context granted, but I like the phraseology nonetheless. Yeah. What about that, especially in terms, I don't know, have you ever had any what we might deem supernatural, I don't want to say paranormal, but supernatural spiritual experiences that, like some people who talk about their near-death experiences, others say, no, I can't believe that you did that or saw that or heard that or went there. That doesn't make any sense to me. What about you?
I've definitely had my share. You know, I'm not a, you know, airy-fairy kind of a person. I'm not, you know, out, you know, like, rubbing crystals over myself or using tuning forks or anything. I'm pretty down to earth, you know, kind of guy, but I've still seen some remarkable things that, that have in the past and maybe not as much anymore, challenge my world order or my belief in what's possible or how do things line up in the world. So I'll give you an example. I sold my chiropractic practice many years ago, and I took a year before I sort of reinvented my life. And that during that year, I ended up in Guatemala. I went to Guatemala to work on my Spanish and to have kind of a vision quest, sort of get away from it all and kind of see where my life was going to be leading. And when I got there, the first day I was in Antigua, Guatemala, I came across a chiropractic office, and I just sold my practice of 14 years, and so I was intrigued that I just walked in, you know, by a chiropractic office, and I went in, and I introduced myself to the owner of the practice, and I said, "Hi, I'm Steve. I'm a chiropractor from the United States," and he said, "Oh, I haven't seen another chiropractor around here for 6 months. Can you give me an adjustment?"
Mm.
So I gave an adjustment, and back to work, and about 5 minutes later, we left his treatment room and walked back out to the waiting room. When we got there, there was a guy sitting in his waiting room who stood up and himself to me and this chiropractor saying, "Hi, I'm Steve. I'm a chiropractor from the United States." And I said, "Well, I'm Steve. I'm a chiropractor from the United States." I said, "Where do you practice?" He says, "I don't. I just sold my practice."
No.
I said, "How long did you practice for?" He said, 14 years. So this is getting very weird. I said, "Well, let's go grab some lunch and talk about it." And so we walked out of this guy's office, and we reached into our backpacks. We pulled out a hat to put on to shield us from the sun. We pulled out the same hat.
This is getting weird now.
It gets weird. Right. Then we go back to his room where he's to pick up his wallet so we can go get some lunch. And sitting on the dresser in his room is a book called How to Win by Quitting. And it was a book that I'd actually read, and it was an inspirational book to me by a guy by the name of Jerry Stocking. And I told him I'd read the book too. I said, in fact, I managed to reach the author and talk to him for about an hour. He said, me too. So anyway, we come to find out, we had both been married. We were good friends with our ex-wives. We both had similar practices. We were both Geminis. Then we started running into each other in different parts of the country. We became good friends, and I ended up getting ready to travel once I got back to the United States out to where he was, which was in Bozeman, Montana. And I was talking to the guy who bought my chiropractic practice. At that point, I said, oh, yeah, I'm getting ready to, hop in my plane. I had my little airplane. I was flying around in it. I said, I'm flying out to visit a friend of mine in Bozeman, Montana. He said, I used to live in Bozeman, Montana. I said, oh, my friend was a chiropractor there. He said, what's his name? I said, Steve Forte. He says, he was my chiropractor.
Unbelievable.
And my best friend bought his practice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
well, go ahead.
Crazy, crazy stuff. Now, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just a bunch of completely unrelated coincidences. But in my mind, and in my experience, when my life is aligned, when I'm doing the right things, when I'm kind of on the right track, I seem to see more of these things happen.
Well, as I have often said, and I coined one word, thrival. I've also coined another word. Actually, I've coined the pronunciation thereof. I'm surprised the British haven't stolen it yet. I do not believe in coincidence, but I do believe in coincidences. Because there are events in our lives that coincide for apparently no reason, but then again, like me in that car accident. I mean, on the one hand, I could have gone off the edge and go, you idiot, why do you pull out and this and that? And who knew what the path was going to take? And lo and behold, the universe, although there are people that have told me, said, you do realize you didn't have to do it that way. And I said, I understand that, but I wasn't hurt. He wasn't hurt. Okay.
Right.
And and I'm hoping that maybe something opened up for him, At least I like to think that maybe he was, that I had some kind of an impact, not as far as the car's concerned, mind you. But that maybe there was something that opened up for him that changed his life in a different direction.
So in essence, it's really a two-way street, right? I mean, whatever that process is that begins to unfold all these magical occurrences, it sort of starts with you. You've got to start by, taking the high road.
Mm-hmm.
Not letting your ego and your habitual mental patterns draw you into yet another expression of doing it the way you've always done it and, getting into that same old fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Or being disgruntled the way you were before. But instead, sort of leaping off into the void, being courageous enough to try something different and not letting the momentum of your habitual mind keep you doing the same thing over and over again. And then suddenly the universe seems to cooperate. It seems to say, hey, you're on the right track, dude.
Well, here's another element to that, and I have to say that I thought about this even beforehand, and I realized that it actually was true, and that is this. I had a beautiful white shepherd husky mix. Her name was Makushla, and she was 16 years old. And prior to her passing, we had cared for her for 14 months mm-hmm. by virtue of the fact that her hind legs didn't work real well. So I had to help her outside.
Yeah.
And we set up this space for her during the day. And then we'd bring her inside with diapers and pee pads and just the whole thing. For 14 months, we took care of her like that.
Mm.
And finally, I reached the point where I said, no, this is not quality of life. Okay.
Yeah.
This isn't fair to her. I can sense that she's frustrated, and so on and so forth. And so finally on the 12th of October at 3:04 PM, we set her free. Now, prior to that, we had felt very stuck, our lives very stagnant. As much as I love my job and all the things that I'm doing and everything and where we live, it just felt like we were stuck. And there was something, a list of priorities, and she was at the top of that list. Now, I wanted to let her go a year ago, November of a year ago, the previous, right? But my wife and I needed to be on the same page. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to be patient. I'm going to care for this beautiful animal who has cared for several others over her lifetime. Mm-hmm. And once we let her go, the floodgates opened. I had that car accident. And then the next thing you know, December, we're getting a new truck, and January and February. I mean, it's just amazing how I didn't even think of it that way at first. And then I began to realize that I knew there were some things that we wanted to do then that we needed to do. And in order to get to the wants, we had to take care of the needs. And once we did, like I said, things just started to change. And I miss her a lot of the time, but the other dog that we have, he's wonderful. Our lives are great. Things continue to evolve. Do you find that when you are with people or just in your own life, you find that, you know, maybe there's that phase of 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 or 14 months where things just aren't moving, things aren't happening, you're not unhappy, and then all of a sudden you make one little change, and then just it's like everything just opens up.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, that's happening in my life right now as we speak.
Really?
I was spending most of my time in the world of keynote speaking, you know, going out and doing big speeches at big corporations and associations. And there was just something about the lifestyle, not just the traveling, but all the marketing and promotion and all that stuff that just didn't really line up perfectly with my vision of a perfect life. And so I decided to make a radical shift. I rented out my apartment, you know, my condo. I've got a beautiful condo on Lake Champlain in Vermont. I rented it out. And I got in my car, and I'm now driving to San Antonio. We're going to run a series of workshops for a friend who runs a seminar company. And I'm still on stage. I'm still speaking, but it's an entirely different model. And it all started falling into place as soon as I said enough. Now I'm not happy with my life the way it's looking. I've got to take action, and I've got a bias toward action. Mm. You know, when in doubt, do something different. Take a chance. Most of us won't because of fear, because of comfort. You know, we're comfortable with things the way they are. And it's the person who decides that they're going to make a radical shift who gets to find out what you found out, which is that there's something on the other side of that very, you know, very solid wall, which isn't really a solid wall at all, but it just feels solid.
Mm-hmm.
I can never get through this. I can never confront that person. I can never let go of this person in my life. Or I can never change jobs. Like, you know, what about insurance? I mean, we've got a million excuses why we fail to take action. And in almost every case, when we finally get to the point where we say enough, I've got to move on. I've got to change. In almost every case, it's a change for the better.
Mm. And even so, there are no guarantees. That is true. But is there a way for us to at least have a greater sense of assurance by virtue of just saying maybe to the universe, okay, I'm going to take an action here because, you know, I'm not happy with the way things are. I'd like more. I'd like something different. Of course, there's a catch there that, you know, be careful what you ask for, you know, because you never know what you're going to get. But is there a way for us to maybe be a little bit more certain, or at least have a little more, maybe it's have a little more confidence no matter what comes?
I think that comes from, again, mindfulness practices. What they do is they give you confidence in the core of your being and your essence as a human being, that the only thing that really matters is your ability to respond appropriately in any situation. You know, things come what may, but if you can count on yourself to respond appropriately, then you're going to navigate the waters pretty well. You know, if you're going to fall apart, then maybe you should just stay where you are.
Well, I mean, if I was on the Titanic, that'd be a whole nother thing, and I just better learn to swim and swim fast. But, there's no question in my mind that it seems like every so often we seem to make some wonderful strides forward. And then there are those moments when it's like, okay, so much for the strides forward, because now it feels like we're going backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Einstein said, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And
I think Newton said that.
Was that Newton? Okay. Well, I've been attributing the wrong stuff to the wrong guy. But it's quite incredible, in my opinion, to think that there are times when we get these leaders, we get these I don't want to say gurus, but nonetheless, there are teachers who think that they've found the fountain of youth, or they found the answer to whatever ails man as far as spirituality, what have you. And then they start collecting all these people. These people just start following them because they're looking around. And then we unfortunately have some of the tragedies that we've had over the decades. But also we have tragedies from the standpoint of people who are taken down a primrose path and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
But again, that's all about choice, too. I mean, talk to us a little bit about the aspect of choice in regards to bringing about the changes that we want to see in our lives.
Well, there are a few ingredients that you know, maximize the chance that those changes will be positive ones. And, you know, just as a quick aside, one of them, I think, is self-reliance, that, you know, a lot of us are looking for the guru or for the, you know, somebody who's going to, like, tell us how to live our lives because we don't want to take responsibility. And or we want to take the pill that's going to make us feel better because we're too lazy to do the exercise that's going to make us feel better, or eat the food that's going to make us feel better. So, you know, we're looking for shortcuts, and it's maybe helpful to start with the idea that, you know, and this goes back to, and this might be a good way to wrap up our conversation today, mm-hmm. is the Buddha in the Trenches principles. It starts out with the idea that you want to choose to be happy.
Yeah.
You want your life to be a happy life. You're not, like, doing what you do in order to satisfy anything other than a life that's a life well lived. That, you know, if you don't, I think that, and that's a good starting point. But then the very next thing we really need to consider is, are you doing it with any kind of integrity? Does your life have any kind of structure? Do you have a moral compass? Are you doing things impeccably?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, if you've developed discipline, maybe you've got the discipline to exercise, or the discipline to, you know, to not go there when fights are about to start. Those are disciplines, and you develop them over time. It's just strengthening your character. And you're not going to get very far down the road toward that life you want if, first of all, you know, happiness isn't a priority, and second of all, you haven't developed the discipline.
Yeah, yeah.
You haven't cleaned up your act.
Absolutely.
Those are foundational.
And I know the biggest challenge that I had as we get close to the end of our program here, the biggest challenge I've had is acknowledging the fact that I actually do have the discipline. And finally, I finally came to the conclusion, I do have the discipline. I get up every morning, I brush my teeth, I shower and or shave, and I get dressed to go to work, and I go to work, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Don't, you know, so it's like, don't be telling yourself you don't have the discipline. Because, you know, actually we do, and it's not that hard to work out. Steve Talbot, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing with us on these ideas and concepts. I encourage people to go to your website, which is stevetalbman.com, and we encourage you to go there. We'll be linked to your website, and two things. Number one is, should you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue these conversations. I mean, we've only scratched the surface, because I wanted to talk about Buddha's influence on you, but we'll have to save that for another time. And then the second aspect is I have three quick final questions, because I know you're headed out the door here. The first one is, who is Steve Taubman?
A seeker.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Again, it starts with happiness for me, and then also that I'm able to inspire others to see that they've got power and choice in their lives.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I think my life's purpose is to teach. I think that's what I am. I think that's who I am. I'm a teacher more than anything else. I mean, I'm, I've been an entertainer too. I love shifting people's consciousness and making them laugh. But I think that it's got to be more than just that. I feel like it's, you know, giving people the ability to see something beyond the way they currently see it.
Mm. Steve, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I'm Richard Duke, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.